Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We are all very, very concerned about an open regional war in eastern DRC.
The African Union meets over the crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo as Rwandan-backed M23 fighters reach the center of Bukavu, sparking fears of a wider war. We'll get the latest. Then, soundtrack to a coup d'etat.
One of America's most popular emissaries arrives in the troubled Congo on a State Department's goodwill mission. Louis Valentin outraged Radio Moscow, which blasted Armstrong's visit as a diversionary tactic.
We'll speak to the director of the documentary, which has just been nominated for an Oscar. But first, as the Trump administration guts the CDC's disease detection unit, this as avian flu threatens the country, we'll look at the state of science and medicine in the United States, considered the crown jewel of the scientific and medical community. We'll speak with stat reporter Angus Chen. Among his headlines, Trump policies spark fears of brain drain threatening to undermine U.S. dominance in biomedicine, and how growing number of federal health agencies are combing grants for taboo words like women and COVID. We'll also speak with one of the leading biomedical ethics professors in the country, Dr. Ruth Faden. She says the abrupt end of USAID-funded clinical trials is profoundly unethical. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has arrived in Saudi Arabia, where he's scheduled to begin talks with Russia over ending the war in Ukraine. But Ukrainian and European officials have not been invited to take part. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared on Meet the Press Sunday.
I will never accept any decisions between the United States and Russia about Ukraine. Never. And our people, never. And our adults and children and everybody. It can't be so. This is the war in Ukraine against us, and it's our human losses.
Zelensky has also rejected a demand by President Trump for Ukraine to give United States ownership of half of Ukraine's rare earth minerals. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron is hosting an emergency European summit today in Paris over Ukraine. For the first time, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has offered to send British troops to Ukraine to provide security if a peace deal is reached. This comes amidst a growing rift between the Trump administration and European leaders. On Friday, Vice President J.D. Vance gave a speech at the Munich Security Conference where he repeatedly attacked Europe on a number of issues, including migration and free speech.
And trust me, I say this with all humor. If American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk. But what German democracy, what no democracy, American, German, or European, will survive is telling millions of voters that their thoughts and concerns, their aspirations, their pleas for relief are invalid or unworthy of even being considered.
While in Germany, J.D. Vance held a 30-minute meeting Friday with the head of Germany's far-right AfD party. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz rebuked Vance for meeting with the AfD just a week before Germany's election.
That's why we will not accept if outsiders intervene in our democracy, in our elections, and in the democratic formation of opinion in favor of this party, the AfD. That's just not done, certainly not amongst friends and allies. We resolutely reject this.
In news from Capitol Hill, the Internal Revenue Service has become the latest federal agency to be targeted by Elon Musk and his unelected team at Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency. The Washington Post reports Musk's team is seeking access to an IRS system that contains detailed financial information about every taxpayer, business, and nonprofit in the country. On Friday, a federal court hearing was held in New York after 19 states sued Musk for illegally accessing sensitive information at the Treasury Department. This is New York Attorney General Letitia James.
No one elected Elon Musk and his minions, and no one has allowed him to have access to this information. This is a violation of the separation of powers. The United States Congress, the United States Senate, has the sole discretion in having the power of the purse, and not Elon Musk.
While the Trump administration and Elon Musk are already facing numerous lawsuits, President Trump Saturday wrote online, quote, "He who saves his country does not violate any law," unquote. California Senator Adam Schiff responded by writing, quote, "spoken like a true dictator." The Trump administration submitted its first appeal to the Supreme Court seeking approval for the president to fire the head of the Office of Special Counsel, an independent agency that investigates whistleblower reports filed by government workers. The official, Hampton Dellinger, says his firing was illegal. Two lower courts have ruled against the Trump administration so far. In its race to purge federal workers, Elon Musk and Doge fired 350 employees at the National Nuclear Security Administration Thursday without realizing many of the workers played a critical role in maintaining the country's nuclear weapons arsenal. The fired workers immediately lost access to their email and were locked out of offices. By Friday, the acting head of the agency rescinded most of the firings, but the agency has had difficulty reaching some of the workers. Senator Patty Murray of Washington and Congressmember Marcy Kaptur of Ohio called the layoffs utterly callous and dangerous, unquote. The Trump administration's also gutted the CDC's disease detection unit and fired hundreds of workers at the Federal Aviation Administration. The Education Department is threatening to cut off all federal funding to schools that don't end all programs related to DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, within the next 14 days. The order could impact everything from preschools to colleges and universities around the country. PEN America condemned the sweeping move in a statement, the group saying the administration, quote, seeks to declare it a civil rights violation for educational institutions to engage in any diversity-related programming or to promote any diversity-related ideas, potentially including everything from a panel on the civil rights movement to a Lunar New Year celebration, unquote. In news from the Justice Department, a seventh prosecutor has resigned to protest the DOJ's decision to drop federal corruption charges against New York Mayor Eric Adams in exchange for his cooperation with Trump's immigration crackdown. Hagan Scotton, the acting assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, resigned, writing, quote, "Any assistant U.S. attorney would know that our laws and traditions do not allow using the prosecutorial power to influence other citizens, much less elected officials, in this way," unquote. On Friday, Deputy Attorney General Emil Bovee, who is a member of Trump's personal legal team, threatened to fire 30 attorneys in the public integrity section of the DOJ if none of them would file a motion to dismiss Adams' case. After the unit considered resigning en masse, one veteran prosecutor agreed to file the motion in order to save his colleagues' jobs. Earlier on Friday, Mayor Eric Adams appeared on Fox News alongside Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, who openly threatened the mayor.
If he doesn't come through, I'll be back in New York City. Right. And we won't be sitting on a couch. I'll be in his office, up his butt, saying, where the hell is the agreement we came to? So
I want ICE to deliver. We're going to deliver for the safety of the people of this city.
This all comes as calls grow for Eric Adams to resign as mayor of New York. At least three of his deputy mayors have expressed their intent to resign. In international news, the fragile ceasefire in Gaza continues to hold despite Israel's ongoing deadly attacks. On Sunday, an Israeli airstrike killed three Palestinian police officers near Rafah. This came a day after Hamas released three Israeli hostages. In return, Israel released 369 Palestinian captives. Four of the Palestinians were reported to be in critical condition and needed to be hospitalized immediately. On Saturday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio met in Jerusalem with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who called Trump's plan to remove all Palestinians from Gaza as, quote, the only viable plan to enable a different future for the region. Rubio said Hamas, quote, must be eradicated, unquote. This comes as Israel continues to block the entry of tens of thousands of tents and mobile homes for displaced Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel's received a new shipment of 2,000-pound MK-84 bombs from the United States. Palestinians in Rafah denounced the U.S. for continuing to arm Israel.
We left our homes looking for safety, but when we returned, we did not find homes. This massive scale of destruction is not normal, and America is still supplying Israel with weapons for destruction. There is nothing to be destroyed anymore. There are only a few people in Palestine, in the Gaza Strip, to be destroyed. It is an ugly crime for America to supply Israel with weapons against the poor citizens like us, and then we return to find no homes or families. This is a crime against the human law and Islamic and Christian law and all religions on earth.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, M23 insurgent fighters have entered Bukavu, the second largest city in eastern Congo. M23's latest advance in the region marks the group's most significant expansion of territory since its rebellion began in 2022. The Congolese government reported Rwandan troops were also on the ground. This comes as the African Union gathered in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where leaders urged for a ceasefire in the DRC to avoid a regional escalation. In South Africa, Moosen Hendricks, a pioneering figure in Islam, was shot dead Saturday. He was considered the world's first openly gay imam. Hendricks was in a car with another person when a vehicle stopped in front of them, blocking their path. Two unknown assailants then got out of the vehicle and fired multiple shots, killing Hendricks. After coming out as gay in 1996, Hendricks hosted meetings at his home for other LGBTQ plus Muslims, later running his own mosque. This is Moosen Hendricks, in his own words, speaking to the Openly channel on TikTok.
I think it's possible to be queer and Muslim or queer and Christian. The representation of faith or religion that was passed down to us, it's one that doesn't include us. And if you really study the religion, and I'm specifically talking about Islam, you will find that our patriarchy has actually influenced the interpretation of scripture. And so it is an important process for queer Muslims who want to remain faithful to their traditions to re-engage with those interpretations and to sort of querying the interpretation. Nobody has a monopoly over faith.
In Western New York, police have arrested five people in connection with the murder of a transgender man named Sam Nordquist, who'd recently been reported missing. Police said Sam was, quote, subjected to repeated acts of violence and torture prior to his death. The group, the New Pride Agenda, condemned his killing, saying it was a, quote, tragic consequence of the rising culture of hate in our society, unquote. Here in New York, hundreds of protesters gathered at the historic Stonewall National Monument Friday after the National Park Service removed the letters T and Q from the LGBTQ+ on the monument's website. The move drew condemnation nationwide as an attempt to erase trans and queer people from history. The Stonewall Rebellion was led in 1969 in part by Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, both transgender activists of color. This is Angelica Christina, trans activist, actor, model, and board member of the Stonewall Inn Gives Back Initiative, speaking on Friday.
To my community, to the trans, non-binary, and intersex folks out there, to our youth, I see you. I love you. You are loved.
That's right.
We love you.
You have a community of people here that love you and see you for exactly who you are.
Yep.
That acknowledge your existence. You are not alone.
In related news, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the federal agency charged with enforcing workplace anti-discrimination laws, has moved to dismiss six gender identity discrimination cases. One of the cases accused Alabama's Harmony Hospitality, LLC, of discriminating against a non-binary employee who was fired hours after the company's co-owners learned of his gender identity. In Miami Beach, Florida, a man's facing two charges of attempted second-degree murder for firing 17 shots at another car. The man, Mordechai Brafman, told police he targeted the car because he thought the passengers were Palestinian. It turned out the men who were shot were two Israelis, a father and son, visiting Miami. The Florida chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, has called for hate crime charges to be filed in the case. In Kentucky, at least nine people are dead after a weekend of torrential rains, gushing winds, massive floods that inundated entire roads and homes. At least one other person died in Georgia as a powerful storm swept through parts of the southeast. The White House has banned reporters from the Associated Press, from the Oval Office and Air Force One after AP refused to adopt Trump's new name for the Gulf of Mexico. Last week, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt publicly rebuked the AP.
If we feel that there are lies being pushed by outlets in this room, we are going to hold those lies accountable. And it is a fact that the body of water off the coast of Louisiana is called the Gulf of America. And I'm not sure why news outlets don't want to call it that, but that is what it is.
And protests against President Trump are being held in all 50 states today. Some are being organized under the banner of Not My President's Day. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, as the Trump administration guts the CDC's disease detection unit while avian flu threatens the country, we look at the state of science and medicine in the United States today, considered the crown jewel of the scientific and medical community. We'll also speak with one of the leading biomedical ethicists in the country, Dr. Ruth Fadin, who says the abrupt end of USAID-funded clinical trials is profoundly unethical. Stay with us.
Hapa Goma mnajiita M23, beni nyini ma ADF, Ituri kode kondo nye, politik do kipasyo tutsi. Idango, jambo hava. Fanya wakimbeze najua mko na togopa ila roho yenu ngumu imewacha hapa jambo wavamizio mmetufanya wakimbeze najua mko na togopa ila roho yenu ngumu imewacha hapa mtaishia hapa kisekedi aliwadanganya mtaishia hapa engineer wa Kongo manio Hapa, kisikedi aliwadanganya uwa Mutaishia hapa, ki injinia wa Kongo manio Tulikosa umoja na upendo
Our Weapons by Delcat Idinko. The Congolese musician and activist was fatally shot on Thursday, February 13th, in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province, while filming a music video. It's not clear who is behind the killing. Edinko was known for his politically charged songs addressing corruption, armed conflict, and governments in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was particularly vocal against the M23 fighters and the Allied Democratic Forces. His death has drawn significant attention to the growing insecurity in the region. We'll get an update from the DRC later in the broadcast. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Since President Trump took office less than a month ago, he signed dozens of executive orders. We begin today's show looking at how these measures have affected the science and medicine, the practice of it in the United States. Many describe it as taking a wrecking ball to the enterprise, considered the crown jewel of the scientific community worldwide. Staff layoffs, slash budgets, diversity programs, canceled studies and conferences have already had a profound impact at home and globally, as scientists, students, doctors, professors, patients have been left reeling. Republican-led states may see some of the worst fallout from cuts to the National Institutes of Health. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Disease Detective Program is among the latest to be gutted, even as the avian flu threatens the country. We go right now to stat reporter Angus Chen, who's been closely following the impact of the Trump administration's executive orders on science and health. His recent exclusive was headlined, "Trump Policies Spark Fears of Brain Drain, Threatening to Undermine U.S. Dominance in Biomedicine." His other pieces include, "Trump's Restrictions Spark Chaos Across Health and Science Agencies. Growing number of federal health agencies are combing grants for taboo words." He's talking about words like women and COVID. "Trump pressuring universities to end DEI or lose federal grants. NIH plans to slash support for indirect research, sending shockwaves through science." And federal judge halts Trump administration cuts to NIH research payments in 22 states. Stat News is a leading news outlet covering health, science and medicine. Angus Chen, thanks so much for joining us on Democracy Now! Why don't you start off by just going through the executive orders? And while some may seem bureaucratic, the kind of, as many have described it, wrecking ball that has really been launched through the scientific and medical establishment in this country.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned two of them. There's the executive order on DEI, sort of banning or trying to end programs about DEI, and the executive order on LGBT identity. This also has a big impact on research. We're already seeing that some grants for studies that look at LGBT identity and risks of certain health or certain diseases are being canceled. And then finally, I would say one really important thing is the NIH directive that was announced about a week ago, a little over a week ago, that cut something called indirect rates down to a cap of 15%. This is really having a really serious chilling effect on the scientific community, a very, very serious, causing very, very serious concern among the scientific community here in the United States.
Angus, let me ask you, that just sounds very bureaucratic, indirect costs. Yeah. What exactly do you mean, and how will it affect the leading scientific and medical research universities across this country?
Yeah. So the number one thing to know about indirect costs is that this is one of the most important ways that the federal government helps to subsidize and fund the scientific and research infrastructure here in the United States. It goes towards paying things like electricity and plumbing and security bills and things like that. Stuff about the basic upkeep of running a research institution. This is why it's also called facilities administration costs, or F&A costs, because it pays for those things, the things that you absolutely need if you're running an organization, if you're running a facility that conducts research. And it's not cheap. It's really real costs. Sometimes people say that these are just administrative costs, sort of administrative bloat. That's by and large not true, that these costs mostly pay for things like administrative bloat. Actually, the amount of dollars that can be paid towards administration for inside of F&A costs is capped at 26%. So they actually never even fully covered the total overhead of a university's sort of research budget.
And so what are the institutions that are most likely to be affected? And also, in general, I'm talking about these massive cuts across the country. A lot of them are in Republican areas. I mean, you've got places like the University of Alabama that get enormous amounts of money to do research.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, these indirect costs are so vital to universities and other types of research institutions like academic medical centers to actually running, to actually being able to, you know, keep the lights on every single day. And that's not just true for red states or states like Alabama, where you have big research institutions like the University of Alabama at Birmingham. It's true for basically every single research institution, every research university, every academic medical center in the entire country. All of them rely on these indirect costs that come from the federal government, from agencies like the National Institutes of Health. Without them, a lot of university leaders and a lot of scientists told me that they simply wouldn't be able to run. They would have to, and certainly not at the level that they are today, they would have to cut back severely on their research programs. They would have to cut back on students. They might have to cut back on a lot of important clinical trials, even, that patients rely on, especially cancer patients who rely on these clinical trials for really the most advanced form of cancer care.
You are a cancer reporter. Can you talk about the effects on the cancer research establishment and in specific examples, what is taking place right now? And we're not only talking about this hurting the United States, but how much of cancer research in the United States is used by doctors and the scientific establishment all over the world?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that NIH dollars have been so important for advancing cancer care and advancing our understanding of cancer over the past, you know, several decades. If you just look from 1991 to today, the number of cancer deaths that we've cut in this country is down 33%. We've eliminated almost a third of cancer deaths, mainly because of our investment in cancer science and in our investment in health research. That's led to so many different kinds of breakthroughs, from CAR T cells, which are living cells that are engineered, immune cells engineered from your body and put back in the patient in order to fight cancer. It's so important for other kinds of breakthroughs in immunotherapy that have, you know, created treatments and cures for so many different patients, not just in the United States, but all around the world. You know, I spoke with one scientist who is at Humanitas University in Italy, and he said, you know, that he was really concerned with some of the cuts on funding that have been proposed for the NIH in the U.S. because the U.S. is such a leader in biomedicine in the world that the loss of research in the U.S. would not just be a loss to American patients, but to people all around the world who depend on this type of science and are looking for that science to bring them the next breakthrough they might need for tomorrow.
You wrote another...
You think about how common...
Go ahead, Angus.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, you know, you think about how common cancer is. It's about 1 in 2 men in their lifetimes will be affected. 1 in 3 women in their lifetimes will be affected. And that means that no family, no person will be untouched by cancer in their lifetimes. And you don't ever know if you or a loved one or a friend in the future might need a breakthrough that's in development today. And that those types of breakthroughs and that type of research in medicine is only made possible by dollars that are funded by the NIH.
You wrote a piece, "Trump Policies Spark Fears of Brain Drain," as we begin to wrap up, threatening to undermine U.S. dominance in biomedicine. Can you explain what's happened, who you talked to, and what they were saying?
Yeah, so my colleague Jonathan Wozin and I spoke with well over a dozen different researchers, scientists, and doctors from around the country. And really around the world about this issue. And the cuts that have been proposed to the NIH that were put into effect last Monday and then quickly halted by a federal court until its hearing date of, you know, the February 21st, lead to such potentially devastating cuts to the research infrastructure of our country that's causing many young researchers and even older researchers, more senior researchers, to question if they have a place in the United States to do science anymore. The NIH has been so vital to holding up our biomedical industry, our sort of the engine of American biomedical discovery, that without it, so many jobs could potentially be lost, which means that for a young investigator, a young scientist thinking, I want to start a lab in the U.S., I'm looking for a university or an academic medical center to begin a research lab, they are really starting to question now if that's going to be possible.